Hello everyone, I'm Shalika De Silva. Today actually Jennifer is away, so I'll be hosting the session today. Now I would like to invite Venerable Panthushan Ratna Thero to commence today's sutta discussion.
Yeah.
Therwan Sannai Bante.
Yeah, Therwan Sannai, hope you can hear me.
Yes Bante, we can hear you.
Okay, fine. Let me share the screen. So we were discussing what we call Kajjaniya Sutta, literally means being devout. So as you know, it is available in the Kanda Samyutta, and very interesting sutta where Buddha strongly considers various actions of the five aggregates. And again, we were going through one by one. And first of all, actually we come across an interesting statement by the Buddha that whenever someone is recalling his past lives, so irrespective of number of lives, irrespective of number of sessions, or how well it is done, how long it is done, but ultimately what he is recollecting is nothing but the five aggregates, all combination of five aggregates. Now this statement refers that we were continuing with respect to five aggregates, and at different forms. It could be human realm, it could be celestial realms, it could be Brahma realms, animal realms, different realms may be there, but wherever we reborn, we are handling these five aggregates. And then Buddha tried to explain why they are called those names. Say for example, the form aggregate, the Pali term is Rupa. So why is it called Rupa? Rupatitiko bhikkave rupang vadami. So there's a term called Rupa. Rupati means that it is getting deformed. So it's constantly getting oppressed by various external factors. Those are very mundane type of external factors like mosquitoes, say flies, climate, hunger, thirst, heat, cold, etc. So those kind of external factors are constantly oppressing this the rupa. So that is why it is called rupa. So these definitions actually help us to have some sort of a dispassion towards the rupa, the form aggregate, and rather than giving a really metaphysical type of definition. Because as you know, the whole purpose of Buddha's teaching is to give us better understanding about where we are, what we are doing in this long samsara. And more we have some sort of an attachment, more we cling to various things, various forms, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, so we are bound to it. We don't think of be free from samsara. So we are sort of adorning our prison. Rather than trying to find out a way out, we are constantly adorning our prison. So therefore Buddha's teaching always pointing out dispassion in ourselves, disenchantment in ourselves, giving us not kind of a blind type of understanding, rather investigative understanding, so that we may understand what is really going on, what is really happening. On the other hand, when we consider the feelings, Buddha mentioned it feels. Either we feel happy, we feel pleasurable, we feel painful, we feel little despair, we feel boring. So these are the types of feelings that we undergo. So we feel, that is why it is called Vedana. Then comes to perception, where we perceive. Various recognitions are happening. We recognize different colors, we recognize different shapes. So likewise, many things, many signs we are using to recognize, distinctly recognize. So this recognition is the primary point to refer as sanya. And then the volitional formations, where Buddha mentioned, that is in a way the most proactive type of aggregate, where it does a lot of modifications, it does a lot of fabrications on top of even the other aggregates and by it and onto itself as well. Say for example, when we come across a sound, so we merely do not stop at that level, rather we do a lot of modifications to it, add, subtract, multiply, add our own likes and dislikes, and ultimately we experience a completely subjective type of experience. We don't know how to get the real essence, rather we have our own type of picture onto it, and that is what we are consuming. Ultimately, it is not really the form, rather we have added so much of our own stuff to it, and that is what we are consuming. That is what we are experiencing. So this is in a way kind of a deceiving thing, because we think that I am now experiencing a sound, as a smell, taste, but onto that basic or primordial kind of data, we add so much of our own stuff, and ultimately we are experiencing an entirely a discolored kind of a data. So that is the function of the formations, where it further and further fabricate, further and further construct, prepare. Rather than taking the very raw format, we prepare on top of that, and ultimately we consume, we experience our own subjective experience. And then consciousness, where the function is to select among, there are many other elements, whenever there are many other things. So we select, and onto that we pay more attention, we focus our attention, and we establish there. So the consciousness getting rooted there and ultimately start to grow there. And we discuss that operation even at the Upaya Sutta. Now, this is how the five aggregates are defined, explained, and now we were going through one by one and giving some further information. And with respect to form aggregate, we discussed how we are trying to recognize it, we are trying to understand it using Kayanupassana. And during the last week discussion, we came through about the feeling aggregate through Vedanupassana, how one can recognize different kinds of feelings. And on the other hand, we can discuss today about perceptions, because that comes as the third aggregate. Actually, the fair amount of understanding of perceptions does not happen at the very level of Kayanupassana or Vedanupassana. To some extent, we can do it at the Chittanupassana level. But on the other hand, a full comprehensive type of understanding may happen as we are moving forward to the Dhammanupassana. So we can't say, therefore, a full understanding of perception is possible unless we go to Dhammanupassana. Because perceptions are quite difficult, and very much like we are born to it, we are living in it, like a fish in the water. So thinking out of perceptions or trying to be away from perceptions is very much like alienated, because we are so much conditioned through the conditions, through the perceptions, and our parents, our teachers, and our education, our languages, all these conventions actually condition our mind so much that we are very much trapped in various perceptions. Say, for example, when we are born to the world, so we don't know any of the signs. We don't know the various words, sounds, etc. So slowly our mother, our father introduce them. So they introduce different colors, they introduce different shapes, they introduce various, say, toys, and they give various names to them. Okay, this is an apple, this is a grape, this is orange. So likewise, we are recognizing different objects, and we memorize them, and next time when we see it, now we can recall what it is, and we can recall the name given. And then we are taught a language. First, maybe we are introducing certain letters, how to write letters, and using letters, how to create words, and what these words represent, and then we are recognizing some basic grammar, and then prepare sentences, and ultimately learning more grammar, then we are preparing say essays, writing essays. So likewise, now slowly we are getting familiar with the language. Now we are using that language, and now even we start to think about into that language. Our minds are slowly getting conditioned, slowly getting molded in order to think in a particular way of language, and this is how we are slowly brought up. So if you are brought up in one country, and this is how you are brought up in that culture, and if you are in another country, you are brought up in an entirely different setup, different cultural values, traditional values, etc. And so your life getting so much framed or so much molded according to those customs. And then even if you go to the college, there also you learn so many different kinds of subjects. We learn so much, and then we go to the university, probably we are learning so much. So information technology help us to access this information quite easily. And likewise, so more and more information now we are storing up, and our minds getting more and more complicated, confused. And this Buddha actually, for our easy understanding, categorized into six groups. So if you consider different kinds of forms, so they have their different shapes, different colors, using which we can fairly recognize different forms. Say red color, blue color, so these are different colors. And triangular, rectangular, these are different shapes. And actually we don't immediately see these primordial kind of characteristics when we see things, because we are at the surface level, we don't penetrate, rather we are dealing with the very face value and with the names. Immediately whenever see our cloth, okay, I'm calling it, this is a shirt. Now shirt is a given name, and we forget how it is being prepared. So even the name shirt is a constructed thing, it's a convention. So it has some sanya, it has some formation, so it's a kind of a combination. But if we go to the very basic level, fundamental level, what is available there is kind of a shape and a color. So therefore we can recognize different colors, different shapes at the form level. So therefore what we call the rupa sanya, the perceptions on the form, so the signs of the forms can be considered as one category. On the other hand, if you consider sounds, so there are different kinds of sounds. Say if you recognize a sound of a bird, a sound of a dog, so you can distinctly recognize. So we know exactly, already we have heard those sounds and we stored them, and we know exactly whether this is a dog or whether this is a bird. So likewise, even at the level of the sounds, so there are distinct differences using which we are able to recognize what exactly it is. So there are certain tones to it, certain sounds, so that certain marks, certain signs using which actually we can recognize. Say for example, even if we hear a sound of a say singer, so we can even recognize his name, because there are certain distinct characteristic to that singer. If there are two songs of two different singers, so probably if you are familiar with music, probably you can recognize who is singing this particular song and who is singing another song. So to that level, we know there are distinct characteristics of perceptions. Actually, to the signs, perception is again kind of a little developed form. Buddha mentioned when we are adding more and more subtle signs, sanya, so ultimately the vipaka, the result is the convention. Result is the kind of a convention that we ultimately start to use. Vohara vepakkanko sanyang vadam. So Buddha mentioned in the Nibbedika Sutta, So whenever we come across so different kinds of signs, marks, etc., ultimately we come up with some sort of a convention. So this convention is the vipaka. Convention is the result of that formulation of different kinds of signs. So you can see it's getting more and more complicated. And ultimately, if we now see, if we come to the taste, so different tastes are there. Say bitter taste, tasty, delicious, maybe sugar, maybe salty. So likewise, different tastes are there, so we can recognize. And again, on the other hand, if we consider different smells, so you can recognize what is the fragrance of a rose flower. You can recognize what's the fragrance of a lotus flower. So there are certain differences. So you can easily recognize whether it is a rose fragrance or whether it is a lotus fragrance, or whether it is coming from an incense stick. You can distinctly recognize. So even onto the domain of smells, so there are little differences. So using which actually you can recognize different smells. Now, if we come to tactile sensations, what we are touching, so they too have differences. Say when you experience heat, you can recognize. When you experience cold, you can recognize. When someone is touching you, you can recognize. Your clothing, when you are wearing one kind of a cloth, probably you have one way of feeling. When another type of cloth is there, there could be another kind of a sensation. So likewise, even onto the level of sensations, tactile sensations, there are differences. Now say if you go to the mind, so there are different types of mental states. Say you are going through some angry mood. So how you recognize it? What are the characteristics? Suppose now you are going through some lustful mood. How you recognize it? Now they two are entirely different. So there is a type of a recognition even onto that level. So you may definitely associate different kinds of signs. Say when you are going through an anger, so there are different signs incorporating that anger, producing that anger, helping that anger, contributing towards that anger. And on the other hand, if you are going through some lustful thoughts, so there are different kinds of signs, marks, contributing towards that lustful thoughts. So you can see even at the mind level, these minor signs are contributing. So this sometimes we can call as nimitta, minor signs, minute kind of signs. And they actually contribute towards this whole way of thinking. So more and more we analyze our own mind, more and more we understand or observe our own mind, so these little things we start to recognize. And one interesting point here is that Buddha and Venerable Sariputta also, he mentioned, Rāgo kuvāso nimitta karano, dōso nimitta karano, moho nimitta karano. It is the lust which makes signs. It is the hatred which makes signs. It is the delusion which makes signs. Now, signs themselves are not the problem. But on top of these signs, we take certain significant value. That is because of lust. That is because of anger. Oh, that is because of hatred. That is because of delusion. Say, for example, if you are looking at a say beautiful cloth, say to one person, say it is seen by a young woman, for her it is a really beautiful cloth and she may want to afford to it, and she want to buy it, and she want to wear it, and you are attributing so much of value to it, and now even you forget, remember it, and if you couldn't buy it, even while you are going back, you may even recalling it. Your mind has fairly occupied with that cloth. So likewise, you can see your mind is fairly obsessed with that cloth. So there are many people who are really obsessed with various styles and they keep recalling those. But on the other hand, say someone who is not much interested about this outer appearance, he too has seen that cloth, but he don't notice it much. It's just another cloth, that's all. He simply pass it, that's all. It didn't attract him. So therefore, how much of signs become significant depends on your own interest, your own kind of greed, your own kind of lust, your own kind of desire operating in your mind. Raga ko aso nimitta karano. So raga operating in the mind becomes the main reason. So if you didn't have any kind of a desire to that cloth, then you are not even keeping any sign. You are not recalling it again and again. You are not thinking about it because you simply has neglected that. You simply didn't take it into notice. So therefore we can see, so it is not the object itself making any trouble, rather how much value we give, how much interest we have, how much significance we give to these various signs. Say if we consider hatred, now suppose you are looking at someone and immediately you feel anger because probably you may remember something wrong that he did to you, and you might think that he may do something wrong even today. He may treat you badly on tomorrow. So likewise, you know, you are confusing yourself, adding so much of anger, and you are burning with anger, and you, even that person go away, you may still remember him. You may think about him while traveling, you are thinking about him, while coming at home, you are thinking about him, and maybe you are discussing with your family members about him, because you have given so much of significance to those signs through your mind. But if another person has noticed the same person, the object that we are referring now, he doesn't make any notice, because for him he may be a neutral person. So therefore he didn't give much of a significance to him, so completely ignored. So his mind is not occupied with those signs. So you can see it is not the sign itself is the culprit, rather we give value, we give significance based on our hatred. So we hate that, we don't like it. So as a result of that, we have taken signs of it. If you don't like, still we have taken signs. Probably I want to forget it now, but still mind is not ready to forget it. More and more, again and again, it is coming to the mind because I have stored so much of signs, because I have given some significance to them. Doso ko auso nimitta karano. And then Buddha mentioned, Venerable Sariputta mentioned, moho ko auso nimitta karano. Suppose that you take everything to the face value, and we consider this is a man, this is a woman, this is a girl, this is a boy, this is a car, this is a Toyota, this is a Corolla, different names are there, brand names are there. And we only operate in the conventional level, never penetrating, and always use these different brand names. We are trapped in them, and ultimately we are talking with them, and these conventions, these terms, these brand names, what we have seen in the advertisements, they all go and store in our mind, and they again and again now recalling. It is not the the inner values, inner characteristics that we recall, but rather we recall the brand names sometimes. So much of influence they have done to our mind, and now we are even recalling through the brand names. Our minds are occupied with various brand names. But ultimately, if we consider deeply, there is nothing, simply they are empty names, empty sounds. But we unknowingly, ignorantly, given so much value to them. And if someone is arguing with your preferred brand name against your preferred brand name, you can even quarrel with him. To that much, we have so much of attachment to that particular brand name. And ultimately, we may even come to a conflict with another person. So ignorance is therefore another factor occupying our mind with so much of science. Moho ko also nimitta karano. And we can't penetrate what really it is, what really available. Rather, we only see the surface without penetrating, without using yoniso manasikara. So we constantly use ayoniso manasikara, just using the sign, just stop at the surface, so that we are not penetrating, we ignorantly take so much of signs. And therefore, the significant thing that if we are able to reduce raga dosa moha, so on the other hand, we can say we are reducing taking signs into the mind. So this statement is something interesting. Now, if you are developing vipassana, and if you can recognize that your lust, hatred and delusion is reducing, fair amount of signs produced by those lust, hatred and delusion also have to be reduced. So they are interrelated. On the other hand, now if we are practicing vipassana, say anicca-anupassana, so you are trying to recognize the impermanent nature, impermanent characteristics of certain phenomena. Suppose you are practicing walking meditation and you are keeping your attention on each and every foot, and now you are trying to recognize how it is moved, and each slight movement you are now trying to comprehend. Now, so much so you are able to recognize this impermanent characteristic. And you may encounter different elements, and at the beginning you may distinctly recognize them, but later these different characteristics start to become somewhat mixed. Ultimately, they all show the same story. They all show certain impermanent, inconstant nature. And you are now, it is difficult for you to recognize which element exactly it is, but all the elements are now showing the same behavior. So they are so vulnerable, they are so impermanent. So their transient nature you are now slowly start to understand. Now, more and more transient nature that you start to understand, now you can see the previous different signs that you have seen, you have noticed. Say, if you consider the earth element, certain characteristics you have seen. With respect to water element, you have recognized certain characteristics. With respect to heat element, you have recognized certain characteristics. With respect to air element, you recognized certain characteristics. But as we move forward, as our lust, as our hatred, as our delusion start to fade away, at least temporary, so these signs start to fade away as well. And ultimately some common characteristics start to emerge. So they are the impermanence, they are the unsatisfactoriness, they are the what we call the non-self. So those characteristics, more and more when yogi is understood, now slowly one's mind become incapable of getting signs. Now say for example, if you are going through Vedana-anupassana. Now, different signs are there with respect to pleasurable signs, pleasurable feelings. So, pleasurable feelings, whenever you go through, so you recognize, okay, this is how I feel. And you may get attached to it. You want it. You desire it. And say, you are going through some painful feelings. There also you can exactly recognize, okay, this is a painful feeling, how you feels like. There are significant difference from a pleasurable feeling to painful feeling. On the other hand, if you are going through, say, neutral feeling, so you can distinctly recognize it. But more and more you observe, so they too start to show some common characteristics. And at that level, you can't even distinctly recognize whether this is a painful feeling or whether this is a pleasurable feeling. Or whether this is a neutral feeling, because all different kinds of feelings are now start to show the same behavior. They all are impermanent. They all are transient. They all intrinsically impermanent. So they don't last for a long time. Rather, each and every minute feeling contributing to those different feelings, either pleasurable, painful, neutral, actually inherently, intrinsically has their transient nature. So if you are able to establish your attention there, understanding there, actually now you can't interpret whether it is pleasurable, painful or neutral. Now even you can understand, so the previous signs which helped you to understand whether it is pleasurable, painful, neutral, are now gone. Now you see a kind of a common picture, and you can't recognize whether it is pleasurable, painful, neutral. Rather, it is something, it is just a feeling. They all are showing the same thing. Now you can see these signs start to disappear. As we are moving forward in Vipassana, and similarly, the lust, hatred, delusion also has fairly faded away. Now, this lust, hatred, delusion therefore has a significant relationship with these signs. Now, if we come to the formations, now formations also, we do a lot of constructions based on this lust, hatred, delusion, and in order to do these constructions, we take a lot of signs as well. Now, there is a significant interrelationship between signs and these formations, because we are using these signs in order to even form, even to fabricate. And we immediately have seen a very little sign, but on top of that sign, we have given some significance, a fair amount of value. And as a result of that, now I am adding so much of my own likes and dislikes. And ultimately, it becomes a huge thing. It is not the very early little sign that I have noticed, but now it has become someone I like. But at the very early stage, what I have experienced is just merely a sign. But now it is no more, now it is someone. So that someone is having this much of characteristics, this much of values, these kinds of ethics, these kinds of bad qualities, these kinds of good qualities. Now our mind is fully occupied with so much of values, so much of signs, so much of significance. So in a way you can see, as we are moving forward, more and more we understand the impermanent nature. Either using Kaya Anupassana, Vedana Anupassana, Chitta Anupassana, Dhamma Anupassana. So the possibility of getting signs, remembering them, storing them, become less and less. So mind becomes somewhat spacious then, because signs, marks are the ones occupying the mind. But when we are not taking signs too significantly, then our mind starts to little get clear. It starts to become somewhat spacious. Because we were the one occupying the mind with so much of signs. But now Vipassana helps us to slowly sweep them away. Not to store signs. Not to make anything significant. And now as a result of that, now our mind probably feels less burdened. Because it is not interested about taking signs. Actually, Buddha even asked us to do it purposely through Indriya Samvara. Now, one aspect of Buddha's recommendation in the sila, morality, is what we call as the Indriya Samvara, restrainment of the faculties. Now, whenever we are with open eyes, healthy eyes, so we can see so many things. But Buddha advised, don't look at various things, unnecessary things, vicious things, and pollute your mind. And when your ears are quite healthy, you can listen to various things. But you don't use that skills to pollute your mind. So better protect your ears, guard your ears. Say, whenever you have a healthy nose, probably you can smell so much of things. But don't use or misuse it so that your mind gets polluted. Different tastes are there, you can use your tongue to taste them. But don't misuse it so that ultimately your mind get polluted. Similarly, there are various, say, tactile sensations. They are again Buddha mentioned. So don't allow the mind to get polluted through these sensations. And different kinds of signs come into the mind, mental objects. And if you are trying to get so much of signs from that, extract so much of signs from that, then again you are trying to pollute the mind. So therefore the advice is to have some restrainment with respect to the signs, with respect to the faculties, indriya samvara. Chakkuna rupan disva na nimittaggahi, nanu vyanjanaggahi. So when you see a particular object, a form, a sight, na nimittaggahi, don't take signs. Nanu vyanjanaggahi, don't go to subtle details. Yatvadhikarana metang chakkhuindriyang asangutang viharantang papaka kusala dhamma anvasavi. Now, whenever you are unmindfully using your eye faculty, ultimately your mind get polluted, your mind get so much of defiled, so don't allow that to happen. Yattvadhikaranametang asangutang chakkhuindriyang viharantang papaka kusala dhamma anvasavi. Tassa sangvaraya patipadjati. So then Buddha mentioned, now you have to restrain the eye faculty. Now you can see, even at that morality level, Buddha highlights it for us to have some sort of a restrainment to our faculties. Now, taking sciences in that sense is one skill or one kind of a task that our faculties are doing. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind. But if we don't have much of a control, if we don't have any kind of a restraint, guarding of those faculties, so they are taking all of unnecessary signs also into the mind, ultimately mind get polluted. So therefore, even at the morality level, Buddha asks us to maintain some restraint with respect to faculties, and ultimately with that helps to minimize the amount of signs that we are undertaking. And on the other hand, when we continue our vipassana, so as we are understanding the impermanent nature of different phenomena, it could be at the anupassana level using different forms, it could be at the vedanupassana using different feelings, and it could be in the chittanupassana, dhammanupassana level with respect to signs, formations, and various consciousness, and you are understanding more and more the impermanent nature of things. So more you understand the transient nature, so your mind become incapable of getting signs, because they are so quickly disappearing, so transient, so inconstant, so you can't store them now. You can't pick any sign, you can't pick any mark. You can't pick whether it is red or blue or right or white or any of these, because they are quickly disappearing. So the dissolution happens so quickly, so you can't recognize what it is. So the signs start to fade away. That is how ultimately mind becomes signless. So mind is getting freed through the signs. Now mind doesn't have any sign, mind becomes signless, and you can maintain your mind at that signless state for some time. So at that time, your mind may experience complete clarity. So much time, actually mind being occupied with so much of signs, now all the signs are, say, temporarily erased, temporarily removed, temporarily subsided, so that mind has its own clarity. Now, therefore, Buddha mentioned sannyā virattassa na santi gantha. Now, when we have some sort of a detachment, sort of a dispassion towards signs, so your mind may not get entangled in various defilements. Now, it has both ways in a way. So, if your mind is maintaining kind of a dispassion, instead of passion, you are maintaining kind of a dispassion. Instead of anger, you are maintaining some sort of a dispassion. Instead of having ignorant, you are maintaining some sort of a heedfulness. So then, signs do not become significant. Rather, you start to ignore them. You start to slowly allow them to pass. You are not attributing any person to it. You are not personifying anything. Rather, they merely become signs. And signs does not represent a person. Say, for example, now assume that you are walking in a desert and you see a kind of a situation, a glimmering sign is there. And if you are a fool, you may think it is water. But if you have already heard there is some kind of a situation during the dry air, so this kind of a glimmering can happen, it is not really water, it is a mirage. So that understanding has to happen through ourselves. That understanding is coming through the wisdom. So this glimmering effect is not water. It is a mirage. Marichikupama sanya, Buddha mentioned. So this sanya is also similarly not really an individual, not really a person, not really a thing. Rather, it is a sign. Suppose you are with closed eyes, now a Buddha image is appearing, but it is not the Buddha, he is not the Buddha, he is a sign. Suppose you are with closed eyes, now there is a beautiful, Devarupa happens, but your eyes are closed. We need to remember, it is a sign, not a celestial being. It is a mind-made sign. Now, these things are very difficult to sometimes comprehend during our meditation session because they appear so real. It is very much like this celestial being is appearing in front of you. So, you immediately give a lot of value to it. You may even start to worship him, start to mention about him to the others, and ultimately you give value a person, attribute a person to that sign. And you take sign as a person. You take mirage as water. And now you are going after water. But unfortunately it is a mirage. So therefore, properly handling these signs is very tricky. So that's why you need fair amount of clarity of mind, fair amount of wisdom to handle them. Because more and more we use values to these signs. More and more we get trapped in these signs. We are using these signs. We are communicating with these signs. We are living amidst these signs. We are fully in these signs, in the signs. Like I said, like a fish in the water. So how to penetrate these signs? How to keep your mind free from signs? Is it really possible to keep the mind free from signs? So these are very interesting areas. Another interesting verse comes in the Kalahavivada Sutta. Na sanya sanyi, na visanya sanyi, no pi asanyi, na vibhuta sanyi. Evang sametasya vibhuti rupang, sanya nidanahi papancha sankha. Now, assume that someone is going through a very good vipassana. He is able to maintain a mind free from signs. Now he has understood the impermanent nature thoroughly. And as a result of that, his mind is experiencing clarity, freedom from signs. And at that time, Now Buddha mentioned the level of sign he is observing or he is experiencing. Na sanya sanyi. Now his mind is not occupied with the typical kind of signs. Typical signs means the signs of the mother, signs of the father, signs of the daughter, signs of the say, Sri Lanka, signs of the economy, signs of the petrol, signs of the war, signs of the Ukraine, signs of the Russia. Now these are the typical mundane signs we all have today. Now that person's, that yogi's mind doesn't have those typical mundane signs. Na sanya sanyi. Na visanya sanyi. So his mind is not with the kind of a wrong type of signs or kind of vikurta, what to say, kind of deformed kind of signs. Now say you are seeing something, and typically you consider it as a bottle. But if your mind is somewhat has going through some sort of a deformation, probably you can't recognize bottle as a bottle. Now even the typical, that kind of functionality has lost. Now you can't recognize. Now you know when one is going through dementia, so you can't recognize properly. And this particular yogi is not going through that. He is not with dementia. He hasn't gone to that kind of a wrong interpretation of the sign. So that is also not the point. Not present in him. That sort of wrong interpretations, wrong signs are not the ones. Deformed signs, incorrect signs are not the ones going through in him. Nopi asanyi. Now there are situations where people go through meditation, arouse strong jhana, and then through the jhanic power, so they stop all the signs appearing in the mind. It's called asanya satta, non-percipient type of situation. And Buddha mentioned this yogi is not into that either. His mind is not in this non-percipient level. Atnopi asanyi, na vibhuta sanyi. And he hasn't completely destroyed the signs. And if he want, he can talk. If he see, he can see. So he is with full active mind. Na vibhuta sanyi. Evaṁ sametasya vibhuti rūpaṁ sanyā nidānāhi papañca saṅkha. So Buddha mentioned, so if one is able to maintain his mind this kind of a way, that means first his mind is not occupied with the mundane type of signs, then his mind is not gone through any kind of deformative type of signs, third his mind is not in the non-percipient level, and his mind is not completely destroyed the signs. Evaṁ sametasya vibhuti rūpaṁ. Now for that person, all different kinds of, say, physical signs that we typically take, say, whole physical world consists of so much of signs, so those are all now abandoned. His mind is free from those signs. And now the patavyapo tejo vayo, the earth, fire, water, air, so those contributing to various other signs, now those are all kept aside. And therefore his mind is completely free. And one interesting statement into that verse, Buddha mentioned, sanya nidanahi papancha sankha. These signs are the root, the source to create mental proliferation. Now mental proliferation is something that we sometimes really love to do. We are trapped in the mental proliferation. We are really loved, delighted in mental proliferation. And if we come to the source of mental proliferation, Buddha mentioned signs are the root, signs are the source of mental proliferation. Sanya nidanahi papancha sankha. Now, therefore, if one is able to achieve this sightless concentration, animitta samadhi, so he is free from mental proliferation at least during that time. His mind is free from this typical mundane kind of sanya during that time. His mind is free from any kind of deformative signs during that time. He is not in the non-percipient level. He is in the percipient level. And again, he is not a kind of a person with a destroyed sign. He is fully aware. He has full awareness. And there is no mental proliferation at all because signs are all abandoned. So his mind is completely with papancha vupasama, nippapancha. No conceptual proliferations at all. For he may be experiencing inner clarity, inner calmness, inner silence. So these are very interesting facts. So when one is going through the meditation, vipassana, especially in the Chittanupassana level and Dhammanupassana level, so more and more one starts to closely examine this whole process going on in the mind, and ultimately he may be able to experience this clarity of mind, silence of mind, silence of inner chatter, freedom from various signs, a fairly spacious mind, a mind free from conceptual proliferation. So, but and in this Kajjaniya Sutta, the strong statement that Buddha mentioned is, even in the past I was devoured by signs. Even now I am being devoured by signs. In the future also I will be devoured by signs. Now that statement could be understood whenever you are able to at least spend some time in the signless state, where you are no more devoured by signs. Your attention, your awareness is not devoured by signs during that time whenever you are in the signless state. In other terms, if you are experiencing animitta samadhi, if you are experiencing some kind of awareness which is completely free from any signs, now your mind is not occupied with any of the signs, but you are with full clarity, full spaciousness. You are experiencing calmness, tranquility. So at that time, your mind is not devoured by signs. But all the other times, you can recognize now, these signs come and eat you. These signs come and disturb you. These signs come and penetrate you. These signs come and pollute your mind, destroy your mind, devour your mind. So therefore Buddha's statement that even in the past I was devoured by signs, devoured by perceptions, even now, say my mind may go through this kind of corruption, this kind of contamination through the signs. Even in the future, these signs may devour me, may eat me. So you can see these kinds of statements actually help us to understand where we are. So what are the values that we have given? So we have given so much of values to these signs. But Buddha look at them in a completely different eye and help us to wake up to that way of looking at things, rather than trapped or rather than conditioned in the traditional, typical, mundane way of looking at things. Now Buddha help us to look at things differently. Rather than trying to occupy the mind and allow the mind to get contaminated by various signs, now we may be able to at least for some time maintain the mind free from signs. And then probably you can look at yourself from a different point of view. There you probably may understand, yes, this mind being contaminated by signs, being polluted by science, being occupied by science, being devoured by science. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante.
Chalika,
if you have any question, raise your hand, or you can directly send it through chat. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Chitra Devi has a question. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Bhante. Now you spoke a lot about perception, and that the perception is the one that's the phenomena that recognizes the emotions. Where does the consciousness, and then you refer to mind a lot, stores in the mind and the signs come up. Does the consciousness also play a part? That my understanding is the consciousness is the knower. So where does this process come into play in seeing these signs? And I know the three things come together and you see the object, that where the consciousness comes, but where else does the consciousness play a part?
Yeah, actually the consciousness play a part at the level of distinctly say selecting something. Now one's main important task of the consciousness is to divide and select one thing among many other things. Now assume that there are 1,000 people, so the individually see one after the other, dividing everybody and then seeing one after the other and selecting one person, and then focusing on to that one particular person and establishing on that person, fully be with that person. So all these are a function of the consciousness. So now if you don't have that function of the consciousness, so what is available is the typical awareness of those, the overview of the thing. It doesn't go and select any particular significant thing, rather just have an overview type of thing. He may simply see without giving any significance to any particular thing and selecting it. Just seeing is there. So the one important function of the typical consciousness is to divide among the whole and then break into pieces, and then recognizing one thing and giving some significance to that one thing, and now deeply rooting, establishing on that particular selected thing.
So perception or sanya recognizes, say, there is anger, and the perception of the sanya recognizes that as anger, but the consciousness is the one that puts the importance to it. Is that correct if I said that?
Actually, yeah, we can say so. Now, in order for the anger to arise, even before that, so the perception, the consciousness has started its task.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Three things come together.
Yeah.
But then, the perception perceives it as anger, but then the consciousness takes
No. Actually, perception does not perceive as anger. Rather, perception simply takes the very fundamental kinds of signs. Okay, this is short, this is long, this is short, this is this color. So these are the very primary level data collection.
So it's the consciousness that really, together with the mind, is the thing that brings prominence and breaks it up and gets us to proliferate and get more angry and gets emotional, right?
Yeah, actually, this we can't say only the consciousness. All these five, they are working together very quickly and ultimately bring up the whole result. So, but for proper analysis, proper easy understanding, so we are dividing them into different categories, and we are now trying to understand their individual functions so that we can see how each and every component, each and every aggregate contribute to this task. So their ultimate result is the anger, but in order to bring this angry state of mind, so these different aggregates have contributed different ways.
Yeah, so in other words, what we are saying is that perception, mental formations, consciousness, they are all acting very, very quickly.
Exactly, exactly.
To produce the end result, which is anger.
Exactly.
And then together with the consciousness bringing out certain things from the mind, we are getting more and more angry with this person.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, even now you can see, I mean, we are angry with this person. Now, when we come to that, that is the end result. So, the anger is not the immediate thing happen, but it may be a little kind of a dislike, little uncomfortable feeling when we consider the feeling level. But that feeling level has now been more and more fabricated, and has now gone to the very painful kind of feeling. It has grown to that level.
Yeah.
On the other hand, in order to pick the information, we may have used I, and we have used various, say, signs of that person, and there is some earth, water, these kind of elementary things to that thing, and that comes under the physical part. So that comes under the rupa and form and various signs we have seen. On top of that, we did a lot of fabrications, and the signs, the very primary signs, are just the color, shape, etc. But onto that, we have attributed a name, we have attributed a person, and we have attributed so much of our own perceptions. So then the perceptions has really grown to another level. So likewise, it is not the very early primitive kind of characteristics what we have really experienced at the early stage is not the one now I am experiencing. It has gone through a lot of deformations during this whole process, and now I am experiencing my own subjective experience.
So can I ask you, is the mind separate from consciousness, or are they all included in that?
Yeah, so we can say the typical, I mean, mind is these four, aggregates mainly. But on the other hand, when you are able to penetrate this whole process, when you are able to develop a fair amount of insight, you can, rather than allow the mind to go through this vicious cycle, you can maintain the mind free from this as much as possible. Then one is operating at a different level where you are not allowing the consciousness to establish. It is not now distinctly recognized, or it is not selecting anything. Seeing is just seeing, hearing is just hearing. So likewise, your mind start to operate at another level. So the conscious, he is conscious, but not established.
Yes, okay. But these are all one and the same. One and the same.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is no place in our brain where the mind is one place and the feelings, perception, mental formations is floating around.
Uh-huh.
They are all in that, whatever that space, right?
Yeah, we can say so. Yes. They are working very rapidly, as you mentioned, very speedily.
Yes, yes.
Very quickly, and helping each other, contributing each other to come up with this thing. And that's why ultimately Buddha mentioned Mayupa Mancha Vinyanam. So ultimately, when there is no any person, we look at a person. We perceive a person. So all these things ultimately coming as an output, as something, as someone. It's like a magic.
Yes,
so various contributions are there coming from different aggregates, and ultimately they produce something interesting, something important, something a beautiful person. So likewise, kind of a magic has happened.
Okay, ultimately there's nothing. As you say, there's signless, but because because we are who we are, we produce these signs, and then we proliferate, and then we just become, more and more with that specific situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, right. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Thank you, Bhante. Now I would like to invite Joseph to ask his question.
Hello, Bhante.
Yes.
I would like to give my meditation report.
Uh-huh.
So, and I think it fits in with today's lecture as
right,
well.
Right.
So, sitting 1 hour, sat cross-legged on the floor, felt comfortable, mind was relaxed. Mind came to the nostrils, noticed subtle roughness with in-breath and almost no sensation with out-breath. Noticed images in the mind coming and going in quick succession. First, the face of a woman from memory. Next, a pleasant image of the same person, also from memory. Next, the face of another woman, followed by a pleasing image. This pattern of images repeated half a dozen times, and I was aware of it as it happened. Noted primary object, breath, remained calm and subtle throughout. Recognized that the mind was jumping lustfully from one object to the next. Noticed images were coming and going, that effort was being made to not indulge in the image, and that they were quickly passing away. Noticed image of a man from memory appearing. Next, an image of praise, where he was listening to me. Next, noticed the neutral feeling. Noticed image of another man from memory, and he was uncomfortable, doubting himself. Noticed a pleasant feeling that I was superior in the mind. Noted breath was calm and quiet. Saw these images running through the mind like a train, with each discrete image like a train car, one attached to the next. Felt relaxed, alert, mindful. Noticed an image of a female standing with the light coming from behind, so it was like a black silhouette. Noted the mind was loosely, easily concentrated on this image. Noticed roughness at nostrils with in-breath and smoothness at nostrils with out-breath. Noted this as earth element. Noted breath disappearing. Noted no more mental images in the mind, but the eyes were seeing patterns of light and dark behind the closed eyelids. Noted a distinction between visual image of the eyes and the mental image of the mind. Noted everything was a blur, a mix of sights, sounds, and tactile sensations, but no smells or tastes or thoughts. Maintained this state for about 5 minutes before opening eyes. And that's the end of the report.
Yeah. I think you can further enhance this. So, I mean, when you are coming to this calmness, just try to stay there. See, we have noticed all these going through in the mind, and once they disappear, once they fade away, and now try to enjoy the clarity. Just be in the clarity, because more and more you need to familiarize with this cleansed mind, more clear mind, more pure mind, which is completely free from any signs, no thoughts, no proliferation, more tranquil, calm, and you can enjoy that. You can sort of appreciate that. Because we have to give some, some sort of improvement, some sort of motivation, encouragement to the mind to just be at that state. Because sometimes it appears like entirely boring, because some people... They call it quite boring. It is true, because we used to agitate our mind with so much of forms, so much of sights. By looking at sights, we are agitating our mind. By looking at various, by hearing a lot of sounds, we are agitating our mind. But now here, when the mind becomes completely free from signs and these different thoughts and etc., so the mind is in a very tranquil, calm state. Rather than sort of interpreting it as boring, just try to be. We are not allowing these signs to devour our mind. We are not allowing various sounds to devour our mind. So we can consider in that respect. So in another way, now mind is in a very healthy state, very pleasing kind of a state, very calm state, healing type of a process. No stress at all. So just we need to be familiar with it. We have to allow the mind to understand how fruitful it is and how useful it is to be there. So therefore Buddha sometimes encouraged this level, telling that you take this as a kind of a true state of the mind and try to dwell there, try to be there. So sometimes Buddha refer sunyata viharana. So he spend his time in sunyata viharana. So he dwells in emptiness. So and he encourages others also to dwell in emptiness. So probably you can remember when we were discussing in the Mahasunyata Sutta. So when the mind is free from any of these signs and it has its own clarity, no tension, no any stress. So Buddha encouraged that and be consciously be there. It's not ignorantly or unconsciously, rather fully consciously with awareness, with soft awareness, with effortless awareness, just be there.
Because there's the doubt that comes after, say, like 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a doubt that comes, like, what am I doing?
Right.
I'm just sitting here.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the thing. So that is the... So we don't need to allow these doubts to, entertain. Now, you can recognize it also as a doubt. And again, you can ignore that doubt, or you can simply abandon that doubt and maintain the mind in the clarity, maintain the mind in the awareness. And again, probably you can recognize that whenever we are there, some sort of an urge probably come internally. I want to do something. I want to do something. So this kind of an urge sometimes coming. So that helps to agitate the mind. So now even that urge we have to slowly fade away, allow it to fade away. So there is no even an agitation. Because Buddha mentioned even when someone reach this clarity of mind, this freedom of mind, still mind probably can get agitated till we have this inner kind of a urge. But if we are able to calm down that inner urge, then slowly we can dwell in that clarity, dwell in that freedom.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Tarvan Sarnai.
Okay, Tarvan Sarnai.
Thank you, Bhante. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, thank you, Shalika. This is Priyadarshini Bhante.
Yeah.
So I understand impermanence, I think, what I understand is everything is just, we are recognizing this Panchupadana Skanda, and it's changing each and every moment, so it is impermanent. And because it is impermanent, it's subject to suffering. And then I'm trying to understand how I can explain non-self using that. And at a given moment, self-making means at a given moment we recognize this. The five aggregate, right? And then, but it's changing from one moment to the other, like Utpada Siddhibhanga. So at a given moment, there is no self. Is that how we explain it? I'm kind of confused there.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, you don't need to immediately sort of try to explain non-self. Rather, you continue the practice. Later, your own way, you may understand non-self. Now, non-self has different characteristics. And I mean, say more and more you continue your practice, so you assume that you understand the impermanent nature. Suppose right now it is the most prominent way that you understood things. And say when you are continuing like that, and because of the significant understanding of the impermanent, then you may, your mind may one moment probably ask from you, how can be a soul, how can be a kind of a lasting entity, kind of hard core in this impermanent structure? Because it is constantly arising and passing away, or constantly impermanent. Everything is very much like scattering, staggering, or say disintegrating. So how can there be a core here then? So this is your own way of insight arising. So therefore, I mean, no point of trying to look at books and trying to recognize this thing. Rather, more you observe things, then this non-self characteristics may come to your own way.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be more beautiful. Bhante, yeah.
Yeah, Bhante, sometimes, you know, when you are in, for short moments, in that signless state,
mm-hmm.
even there's no signs, I still feel like it's me, I am there. That feeling is always there.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter. I mean, we can't immediately get rid of everything. So basically, I mean, first of all, we need to recognize kind of a field, kind of a, say, oasis first. And we need to approach there. We need to approach there. We need to establish there. We need to properly consolidate there. Once there, then we need to recognize, okay, what other problems are still available. So therefore,
what I recognize is my the main problem I have is I have so much mind making,
mm-hmm.
and so everywhere the mind is trying to tell that it's you there. So I am trying to understand it, but I know that is the major problem.
Mm-hmm.
So all the suffering that I feel, like I believe because of that misunderstanding.
Very true. Yeah. Completely correct. But the thing is, in order to properly handle that, first of all, we need to consolidate this this signless state, or the desireless state, or the empty state of mind. So that we can consider as a kind of a fortress that we are building in order to fight against the defilements. So this is a very strong fortress that we are as practitioners building. So we may go through various insights, we may understand the impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature, so that we are very strongly established in this what we call the signless state. So once we are established there, then we can do these all the clarifications, all the other disarming process of the terrorists. First of all, we need to consolidate in our fortress. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Teruvan Sannai.
Thank you, Bhante. There is one more question. Can you please? Okay, Darshika. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you, Shalika. Can you hear me, Bhante?
Yes, yes.
I want to ask a small question. Now, when I'm in the animitta conscious vijnana state, you can watch what's happening like an outsider. Example, you are watching the pain, but normally there has to be the contribution of three, and the touch sparsha comes in, and then the vedana. So can you explain how this happens, where you are in the animitta state and you are watching from outside? So how does the conscious work there?
No, actually, in the animitta state you can't have established consciousness. So your mind cannot, so your mind cannot pick a particular sign and give a value to it and recognize it and establish properly there. So this whole process cannot happen there.
So, but when we are in the sunyata state, that is, we are not having a nimitta. That's the animitta state. But then you can watch what is happening.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's what I said. You can watch. I mean, you are seeing, but your mind is not located on any particular thing. So you can see as a kind of an overall picture, but not selecting any particular thing among any of. I mean, assume that there are 1,000 things there. So you see a overview of all 1,000 things, but you are not picking anything and then properly establish onto that thing.
Yes, so because you're only just seeing an overview.
Yeah.
So is it like a mirage?
No, can't be. Not a mirage. So seeing is just seeing. You are not talking about it. Your mind is not thinking about it. Your mind does not pick any sign and occupying your mind with any of the available things. Mind may have its own clarity. So these signs are there. I mean, when you are seeing things, I mean, a lot of signs are there, but they are not coming and occupying your mind.
So it is a better state.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So even actually, when we come to the Buddha's teaching, say now there is a what you call Brahmaya Sutta, I think. So there are. It is mentioned, now assume that Buddha is taking his meals. So there it is mentioned, so while Buddha is taking his meals, so he can recognize different, even the tastes.
Yes.
But none of them are occupying his mind, so that ultimately building any greed to any of these what you call the tastes. But he may go through different types of tastes. So likewise, it is not that one become completely, blunt to any of the signs or any of the tastes or any of the smells or any of these. That he may go through all them. He is fully conscious, fully aware, but they lose their ability to occupy the mind. They lose their ability to generate any greed, hatred, delusion in the mind.
Thank you very much, Pante.
Teruvan Sannai.
Now I would like to invite Kumudini to ask a question.
Teruvan Sannai, Pante.
Yeah.
My question is a follow-up of all the questions that have been asked today. Meditation... is to dispel the sense of self. I want to find out from you what you think. We get, some of us practitioners, friends, we get together and discuss, our experiences and all that. And one person showed us some videos on YouTube where they tell you to, watch the video and... they are showing you something and they say this is how you get rid of your sense of self. And I was amazed, can you do it like that?
By looking at the video?
Yes, and they are telling you, now think of this and see this passing through and it's not you and your thought is not you. Can you do it like that?
Actually, I mean, you can, I mean, you don't need to use a video, you can look at anything, and whenever you prepare a self because of that sight, so if you recognize that eye making is happening, if there is mind making happens, and if there is any conceit happens, you have to abandon that. I mean, you don't need to really see a video to do that. You can see anything. I mean, in the typical mundane life, say now you are living normal life, but you are fully aware of what is going on in the mind, because there is a potential of arising defilements, potential of making I, potential of making mine, and any of the experiences. So whenever it happens, so your mindfulness come forward and show you, okay, now again the your mind get trapped, again mind get cling, again mind get grasped. So at that moment, you have to relinquish grasping, you have to abandon grasping, and again the mind get released. So it is not necessary to go through the videos. I mean, even when you are going through a video, probably if it is a really beautiful video, you may get attracted to that. Again, mind get established. Again, mind get established there. And at that moment, your awareness, your mindfulness has to indicate that to you. Then you have to abandon that.
Bhante, these videos are not just videos that you watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Eckhart Tolle is another
ah.
one.
Ah, ha,
ha,
ha. Ah.
And there's several others that have come up with this sort of thing.
Ah, ha, ha.
Is that a good way to follow those?
So, what is the content of that video?
It is like, I didn't get it, so that's why I'm asking.
Uh-huh.
Should I pursue the postings or not?
No, that's the thing, because I haven't go through them, so I don't know what exactly they are showing. And but according to the Buddha's teaching, I mean, we don't need these things. But I mean, if it is a kind of, say, some skillful mean, but we can't then ignore, because, I mean, there may be various, what you call, some skillful means that you can sort of catalyze the situation. You can make use to properly handle the situation. In that sense, it could be useful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that, because I was a little bit, skeptical.
Yeah, I also don't, because I don't know, because I haven't watched any of these videos, so I don't know what exactly they are showing and how it is contributing to make I, make mine. I don't know how it is happening and what their instruction is. Also, I don't know.
It is more like intellectualizing. Some video is shown and they are able to intellect. I thought this sense of self has to be eradicated through the process of meditation developing.
Uh-huh.
And then get by other factors that you are discussing in this, such as the standards that you are discussing in this, Dhamma talks and
yeah.
Sutras of the Buddha.
Yeah, so actually the Buddha's approach is not merely an intellectual process, rather it goes through some restrainment, the morality, building up of the clarity of mind, as we discussed even today, and then you have to go through this intellectualized, the what we call the cognitive type of a transformation, because the behavioral part is also there, and then the mental development is also there, and the morality that is there. And then the cognitive transformation happens slowly with the help of all these other contributions. So if you don't, I mean, if you simply ignore the morality part, if you ignore the mental development part and only talks about the intellectualizing the whole thing, then it is not practical.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Sir.
Yeah, that one, Sanai.
Thank you, Bhante. Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes,
it's
yes.
Not a quick question. It's kind of a statement.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure what I understood is right.
Yeah.
Basically, regarding the perceptions, what we should try is just to abandon the perceptions that which would arise like our lust, hatred, and delusion, and. We need perceptions actually to understand Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, once we understood, that means we developed our wisdom. And then basically, eventually, we should abandon those perceptions perceptions as well.
Exactly. I fully agree with you. So basically, at the beginning, what we have is kind of perversions. The perceptions have prepared kind of perverted ideas within ourselves. So those perceptions are quite harmful and wrong. So instead of that, Buddha recommends some sort of proper perceptions, say perception of impermanence, perceptions of suffering. So likewise, those are some proper perceptions to somewhat mold our mind in the proper way. And once we are able to penetrate the mind and sort of have proper understanding, now you can, abandon all the other perceptions as well, which we have used in order to properly guide the mind. So that is what I mean. Say, for example, even in the Girimananda Sutta, so there are 9 perceptions introduced. So those are very valid and something, motivating ourselves, encouraging ourselves to develop. And once we practically develop them, then the mind become fully, aware, fully pure, non-attached. So that sort of things are there. So those perceptions encourage to establish ourselves in the proper Dhamma.
This is a long, really, really long process, but that is the path I think we should be following.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bhante. And thank you all for your participation. And wish you all a very happy rest of the week.
Okay. Then actually today we'll wind up our session. So we have spent a fair amount of time today and we have accrued a lot of merits. We'll share these merits with all the past devi relatives, with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ittavata chvam hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata chvam hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata chvam hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo jñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā hontu jñātayo. Idam vo jñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā hontu jñātayo. Idam vo jñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā hontu jñātayo. Imina puṇyakammena māme bāla samāgamo satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇyakammena māme bāla samāgamo satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇyakammena māme bāla samāgamo satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu.